Saptabhujam, these seven factors of enlightenment. Yeah. Last time we looked at about the Sila Sutta in the seven factors of enlightenment from the connected discourses of the Buddha. That's the one that we use for the meditation, as the meditation technique here. That is that in that discourse you can remember Buddha was telling that when someone recollect Dhamma and thinks it over, whenever bhikkhu dwelling thus withdrawn recollect the Dhamma and thinks it over, on that occasion the enlightenment factor of mindfulness is aroused by the bhikkhu. On that occasion bhikkhu develops the enlightenment factor of mindfulness. On that occasion enlightenment factor of mindfulness comes to fulfillment by the development in the bhikkhu. That means if you recollect them, whatever the teaching is, Buddha's teaching, then just by having heard it, you recollect it from your mind, then the factor of enlightenment and mindfulness come to arise. And then you investigate that, you discriminate that Dhamma with wisdom, examine, how is it arising? Is it impermanent or is it suffering and not self? Those things are you examine. So the discrimination of that Dhamma, then investigation of the truth come to arise. So that's how the seven factors come to arise. Today we look at another discourse. It is called destruction of craving. Buddha said, bhikkhu, develop the path and the way that leads to the destruction of craving. And what is the path and the way that leads to the destruction of craving? So you can see that we have craving for the sensual desire, craving for becoming or the existence, and craving for non-existence. So Buddha said that if we develop these paths, then we can this development lead to the destruction of craving. It is the seven factors of enlightenment. This meditation that we did today. What seven? The enlightenment factor of mindfulness, enlightenment factor of investigation of the truth, enlightenment factor of effort, and the rapture, and the tranquility of mind and the tranquility of mental states, and then the concentration and equanimity. Those are the seven. When this was said, the Venerable Udai asked the Blessed One, Venerable Sir, how are the seven factors of enlightenment developed and cultivated so that they lead to the destruction of craving? And Buddha said, here Udai, a bhikkhu developed the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, which is based upon seclusion, dispassion and cessation, maturing in release, which is vast, exalted, measureless, without ill will. So, in Pali it goes like that, Viveka Nisitam, Viraga Nisitam, Nirodha Nisitam, Osakka Parinamim, Vipulam, Mahakatam, Appamanam, Abhyapadam. So there is no ill will at that time. And it is based on the seclusion. So you withdrawn from the crowd and all those things and then go into a place and you meditate on your own. And based on the dispassion, that whatever the lust and all those things that you want to get rid of. So there's dispassion. And the cessation of the craving. So, for example, if you even think about the cessation of craving, these factors come to arise. And the maturing in release is called Vosagga Parinaming in Pali. It is that, it's like that, you are sort of either side of the hindrances or you are side of these factors, enlightenment factors. So it's like a sort of a fence that you, in this side, or you climb the fence and you can jump to the other side, right? So when you develop these things, you can cross over to the other side. And which is vast, you make it bigger, measureless. The appamana, that like if you spread loving kindness, for example, for a long time, your mind becomes so vast and it becomes measureless. And without ill will, shouldn't have any ill will. When he developed the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, which is based upon seclusion and so on, and without ill will, craving is abandoned. And I will explain a little while how this is this one is a very short discourse, said in a very short way. With the abandoning of craving, karma is abandoned. If you abandon the craving, then the karma is abandoned. With the abandoning of karma, suffering is abandoned. He developed the enlightenment factor of equanimity. So all the other things, and then the last one is the equanimity, which is based upon seclusion, dispassion and cessation. Maturing in release, which is vast, exalted, measureless, without ill will. When he developed the enlightenment factor of equanimity, which is based upon seclusion and so on, craving is abandoned. With the abandoning of craving, karma is abandoned. With the abandoning of karma, suffering is abandoned. Then sudai, with the destruction of craving, comes the destruction of karma. With the destruction of karma, comes the destruction of suffering. So how do we get the meaning of this one? This is a very short thing. See, if you look, pay attention to the parts over here, Buddha said that you got to have the seclusion, dispassion. Right? So normally, normal person would indulge in these sensual things, sensual pleasures and so on. So this particular person who want to abandon all those things, he away from those things and go and try to do the meditation. So since you have the desire to abandon this sensual desire, the ill will and so on, one would put effort and go into this concentration. So you, instead of the sensual desire, you will have the renunciation of sensual pleasures. Normally one would have the ill will thoughts, and this person got the non-ill will, non-malevolence, and non-harming thoughts. So you can see he is already in the path to the Nibbana, that is right thought that is coming up. So he keeps on applying this the renunciation thought, and then the non-ill will and non-harming, non-malevolence and non-harming thoughts keep on applying in his mind. I will give up those things and I will get rid of those things. So he is putting effort over here that to do that. There's a big effort first to get out of the crowds, get out of those sensual desires. And so that person going to a lonely place and doing this meditation. So you can see his effort is sort of already started. If someone is mindful and then withdrawn from those things, he's got effort, then the rapture arises for that person. So this person is investigating this Dhamma. He applying the sensual desire is bad for me. That is his investigation. He thinks that whatever the sensual desire in the world, then whatever the sensual desire after this birth and so on, many births to come, they all are lead to suffering. And having seen this particular thing, having understood this thing to a certain extent, or having heard it from Buddha, then he put effort to get rid of these things. So his investigation of the truth becomes this, I will get rid of these things. I will behave this and this way. So since he got the effort, then the rapture come to arise. He had the mindfulness to the Dhamma, and then he investigate these things, and he got the effort, and the rapture come to arise. When the rapture comes to arise, you can see this, there is a physical happiness coming inside your body. It's starting from your head or somewhere, it is flowing through the body, right? It's pulse going through that one. So you can make it so vast that it is touching your all parts of your body. It's starting from here, the whole thing. It's like a water running through your body, right? And since you have that, then you don't go outside because you are now happy. Remember, this particular person actually gave up the crowd and came to this particular place to meditate. Now he is successful. He is getting the rapture and so happy. And so when the rapture comes in, there is pleasure. The rapture is a physical happiness. because of the physical happiness, there is mental pleasure. So, there is this tranquility, tranquility of the body and the tranquility of the mind. So, since there is this tranquility, tranquility is sort of explained in this way, that it's like that person, let's say, he's going in a burning sun, right? In a summer time, and it's 40 centigrade or something like that one, and then he's actually go underneath the tree. Now he's not affected by the sun rays, and he's sort of happy over there underneath the tree. Like that, that this person is, his tranquility is that because he's not burning from lust, malice and the delusion. Those three things are not burning him anymore. So he's got the tranquility. So when the body becomes tranquil, the mind becomes tranquil and he's happy, then the mind becomes concentrated. Even if you take in a mundane example, even a small child when he's playing a computer game, for example, and he doesn't want to go anywhere in the house, he just keep on playing these things because it's making him happy, right? Likewise, that because there is this inner tranquility and inner happiness, the mind becomes concentrated. When the mind becomes concentrated, he would examine this concentration that has arisen. First, he would actually, there are a few steps I am skipping over here. He would actually see that in the first dhyana level, let's say in the rapture level, he would sort of see that this rapture has in my body and there may be clinging, you know, that it can lead to clinging. Whatever the physical happiness, sort of there is tendency to clinging sort of thing. So he doesn't want to have that one, so he get out of he would like not to have those things. So when he does not want that, then he get the pleasure born out of concentration. That is the third dhyana level, third concentration level. And he get the pleasure born out of the concentration. Then you can see that when you have the mindfulness and you have sort of a pleasure, your mind is sort of unmuddled mindfulness, it's a muddled mindfulness, in the sense that since there is pleasure, that your mindfulness is not pure. There is this pleasure. This pleasure is so much better than whatever the sensual pleasures that you can imagine. But still you see, if there is a pleasure, there may be a clinging. If there is a clinging, then because there's tendency to attachment lies latent in the pleasurable feeling. So that means my mind is not perfect, not pure. That leads to sort of, can lead to suffering nature. So that means not understanding the suffering nature is the one that this particular thing we are talking about. So he would prefer not to have this pleasure either. Because that mind, I won't make my mindfulness so pure. And so he go into the equanimity level. So that means he become indifferent to the pleasure that has arisen. Whenever one become indifferent to the pleasure that has arisen, then go into the equanimity state. What is lying behind the equanimity state? You see, the tendency to attachment lies latent in the pleasurable feeling. Tendency to aversion lies latent in the displeasure feeling. And tendency to ignorance lies latent in the neither pleasurable nor unpleasurable feeling. There is that something, that knowing nature in that, right? Although this is better, pure. And so now the Dhamma get bit stronger and stronger at this particular point, because that these seven factors of enlightenment, I would say, if you are developing, if you would be in the third part of those nutriment, that is the starting from the volition, and you are going against that one. So remember, we were talking about having this dhyana concentrations here with these factors. And so that is one way to attain Nibbana. In that particular path, this is called the third path, Sukhapatipada in Pali, Dandavinya. Over here, that you have gone beyond this volitional formation state, because Over here, remember that he was actually disregarding all the states. Even the rapture I don't want, and the pleasure I don't want. I want to have the pure equanimity, right? At that time, you are not going to touch anything. You are not going to regard anything as mine. Let this be mine, that nature is not there. Let this guy be dead, that sort of thing are not there in that mind. So, that means that volitional formations leading to this one, you do not cling to that one either. You are not taking that one as mine. You see, all these things are constructed. These concentration states are also constructed by your mind, because you just sit down and start doing meditation. Because of that exercise, whatever thing that comes to your eyes, you can see that the eyes is the sanskara or volitional formations. So, if you are becoming indifferent to everything here, you become indifferent to the volitional formations as well. So, you are not taking this volitional formation as mine either. If you are not taking volitional formations as mine, you are not making my making, I making things over here, you can see that is not self. That is what is called not self. That is not mine. If you don't have the not self nature in that one, that means that the volition, that there was a perception that created this volitional formation. Perception led to volition, and volition, there is this, by my making I got the volitional formation. Now we are going back in the reverse order here. Since I don't have the clinging to what I am constructing, for example, let's say a carpenter constructs some sort of wooden chair, not for him. He construct another one, not for him. And eventually wouldn't he get fed up and just keep on constructing these things for people or somebody else like that? They are not mine. So there is this tendency from that the carpenter to give up these things, right? So then why would he then effort and construct these things? So that the clinging to the volition is actually going out of his mind as well. I don't want these things anymore, right? Whatever reason he was constructing it before, now he has no reason to construct that. The volition is going means the perception is also going. When you are, because the perception is the one that lead to this volition. If there was no perception, there won't be volition. As soon as you get out of perception, you are getting out of the volition as well. So since you got out the volition, so you are getting out of the perception. So you can see, what is this perception? Perception is actually saying before, these constructions, these things are good, you know, valuable. I value, they are as mine. Now he does not see that way. He would see that the pleasurable feeling that has arisen, right, it is useless. That the carpenter would have sort of earlier, sort of think about these goods, I made something beautiful and people are appreciating it and they are using it and so on. Now he give up this idea, whatever thing I have made, they have taken and doing that one. And what is it that I have made? Is a piece of wood constructed in this way, that way. Nothing further than that. So he does not cling into that feeling. What does that mean? If you are not clinging to the feeling, that means there is no craving. Because of the feeling, there is craving. See that how the Dhamma is going back.
But you said that because of no feelings, no harm.
Because of the feeling is coming up, but you don't perceive that as pleasurable or valuable. You don't give any stamp to that one. This is $10, $50, valuable, useful and sort of thing. You don't make up in your mind this, you know, the perception parts, such and such, that this is a good thing and so on. So feeling, that just as even has arisen, it has no value. Because I'm not carrying forward it any further. All those things, because of the equanimity, you understand this suffering nature, that the volitional formation, the sanskara, as impermanent. Because that one constructs the consciousness is impermanent, therefore you coming back in the reverse order and you see volition is also impermanent. Impermanent is, that means that there is this cessation part. Remember that this arising phenomena and the passing away phenomena in the impermanency. So here he look at the passing away phenomena. He is fed up with the arising phenomena, because you know arising phenomena always lead to suffering. Whatever thing I'm clinging, it's leading to suffering. Remember, this person who want to get out of these things, that's why he's coming here and meditating. So therefore, that person, he see that I construct things and no value whatsoever for me. They are not mine. They are impermanent. That is, it has a cessation nature. He would now, this carpenter, for example, would actually see these wood pieces that he constructs, this whole broken down into pieces and pieces, you know. He would even see the wood pieces that, you know, other people have thrown out after using it or something. So whatever the sanskara, volition that is there, is no value. Because now he is actually getting rid of these ones, so he is destroying the craving, he is going back to loop in the dependent origination. And then no clinging to feeling means no craving. No craving means I am not going to go have a volition, no volitional formation. The karma is all gone. So the cessation of that one is leading to this one. So you can see the discourse Buddha set in two paragraphs here. This is the discourse is destruction of craving in the Bodhjanga Samyutta, the connected discourses of the Buddha. And so it's very lengthy. I can explain it in various ways, but these are actually for coming from these four nutrients, the contact. You know, the edible food, contact, the volition and the consciousness. It is the end of that line is that we are actually starting and coming back to it here by developing the seven factors of enlightenment. Seven factors of enlightenment are completely against the third part, starting from the volition, what you construct. It is killing that line, complete line. With the original for the seven factors of enlightenment is so powerful, and it leads to this appreciative joy. It's this you know, there is this metta, loving kindness, the karuna, compassion, and then the mudita, the appreciative joy, and then the upekkha. So we actually started with the upekkha, the equanimity. Right, by developing the seven factors of enlightenment and coming back through the line. When the seven factors are maintained, then you are maintaining the higher concentrations all the time. You are purifying your mind all the time. It's so powerful, meditation. So do you have any more questions?
So basically what it is that when you meditate, you gain rapture, then you are going to be indifferent to the rapture.
Yeah.
And that means you are...
Because of the rapture, now it goes in the line. Because of the rapture, you get the tranquility. Right? Because of the tranquility, you get the concentration. Right? Now, having reached that concentration, having maintained that concentration, in various levels, first you maintain in the first jhana level, where the rapture is sort of, you know, foremost and valuable. And you have the initial application and sustained application to the Dhamma. That is vitakka vichara, that I want to get rid of the sensual desire. I don't want to have the malevolence. I want to get rid of that one. So I am pursuing for the non-malevolence. And then I want to get rid of the delusion. Right? So you maintain that one with the initial application, sustained application. So you get fed up with the initial application and sustained application itself. Because that I have to, if I want to do something, if you want to have rapture, if I have to keep on applying, keep on doing something, it is trouble for me. So I would like to have whatever thing it is without. So I can actually then go into a sort of a scenario where I don't want to have the initial, I don't have to apply these things, keep on applying. So I mean the second jhana level. And when we get the second jhana level, you have the rapture, the pleasure and the concentration. So rapture, now I'm thinking about my rapture itself. At the second jhana level, well, this rapture can lead to clinging in the sense I might cling into this rapture. For a beginner, there is. If you get the rapture for the first time, I can remember when I got the rapture for the first time, I was actually keep on contemplating. And the after the meditation and sort of after eating, then I find, wow, that was really good. That was the first time I had this rapture in my life. And this is a spiritual rapture.
Sorry, I keep thinking, what do you mean by rapture?
Rapture is a...
I'm not sure if I don't understand the word or maybe...
Well, rapture is a happiness. There is this happiness. It starts from, depends on the person. Normally it starts in my one and from the head.
Yes.
And there is some sort of a pulse or something going over here. You can see in the skull, you know, the inside the brain. And you're so happy. You're so happy. It's, I mean, it's impossible to explain it to someone who has not actually got it.
Yes.
But do you know that there's certain shops sell you that the pleasure points touching equipment?
Yes.
That, have you touched that one?
Well, I've seen people, yes.
Holding that
it.
One? Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There are certain massages.
Yeah, that's right. It's not a massage, it's just a touching
but
over
I've
there.
I've seen that, yes.
Yeah.
That
I've one, actually, you can sort of see tiny little of rapture in that, doing that one.
Yes.
So it's so happy. As soon as they did to that one, I just went to a shop. I had this rapture, and I had by that time I had developed that one quite a lot.
Yes.
As soon as they put that one, wow, rapture starts over here. And then I was actually saying, wow, this particular object can even create that one. I don't know the others get this to the same level, because if one thing fired over here, for me, the rest will get because of the concentration, quick concentration. So, it's you so happy, you become so happy. And then, it's physical, you feel it physically. And if you had it for a long time, actually, you will get tired as well. Because it's something happening over here, chemical reactions. And it's really good for the body. But the meditator get tired about that, because that this is happening. And so that... I don't want to have the rapture, because that you would sort of cling to this rapture. You might, because the next day I wanted to have it in the meditation. I didn't get it for 1 month. I had it first time because I'm thinking, now I will get the rapture. Now I will get the rapture. No, if you think about it, you don't get it, right? So it's just by contemplating Dhamma you get the rapture. Otherwise you don't get it, right? So... the rapture, since you understand in this rapture, anything clinging can lead to this suffering, I don't want to have the rapture either. So then I get out of the rapture state, and there is this pure, sort of pure, not completely pure, that the pleasure born out of concentration. That's the third jhana level. So there is this, the mindfulness, sampajana. That is this sort of clear comprehension. What was this clear comprehension? That the rapture can lead to clinging. That clear comprehension is there. So now there is this clear comprehension and the pleasure. And now when you look at the pleasure, you can see there is a tendency to attachment lies latent in the pleasurable feeling. So then you are actually thinking that that my mind is not becoming so pure. Pure like gold, for example, pure gold. So when I have this thing, so I want to get rid of the pleasure as well, right? So I become indifferent to the pleasure. So I go into the equanimity state. So that's the state that you are maintaining.
What's that equanimity?
Equanimity is that it is night equanimity.
Mm-hmm.
Upekkha in Pali. That is neither pleasurable nor non-pleasurable, but there is this wise attention, the clear comprehension in that level. Yeah, it's a pure. Buddha said that in that particular state, whatever the knowledge is in there is accessible to that level of concentration. It's so pure. You can see other worlds and you can do so many things with that one. So
rapture, concentration, tranquility.
Rapture, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. Yeah. So, that's the path.
Yes,
Seven factors of enlightenment. First one is the mindfulness, and then there is this investigation of the truth, and then there is this effort to discard the evil that has arisen, effort to prevent the arising upon arising evil, effort to develop a wholesome state, the wholesome state of the stream enter, once return, and so on.
So that means there is some sort of overlap between Sabdabuddha and Narasimha.
Of course, there is. But they are aligned in a different way. There is. The seven...
Somehow I am.
Yes.
The concentration.
Yes. There is.
Mm-hmm. So the mindfulness and then the
investigation of the truth. Dhamma vichaya. Is there... Yeah, right view, for example. Right view, sort of simply say what it is. That you are actually examining it, that is suffering. This is the cause of suffering. And the cessation of suffering and so on. So, impermanent nature. Yeah. Okay, we'll stop for today. Yeah.